Welcome to the Winter's Business Lunch with me, Jisoo Gee, on this Wednesday. Wish it was under better circumstances. Very scary to check in on your 401k account and see all of the losses. Before we start, here's the number because I know you'll want to call in. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Let's check in with finance and the economy and markets expert, Terry Savage. Terry, is this feeling like 2008 all over again?
No, this is feeling, actually, frankly, to me, it's feeling worse.
Oh,
because
wow.
I knew in 2008 that, quote, they could fix it, and they would get around to fixing it. They would throw money at the problem, they being the government, the Fed, that there was a fix, and so that if you only had enough confidence, you could ride it out. The thing that makes this different is there is no obvious fix. In fact, it's taken us too long to recognize the problem itself. And that practically ensures longer-lasting impact. I mean, I know we're talking money, but this is big and beyond the balance in your 401k. This is about our economy, the number of people that will contract the virus, the number of health institutions that will be, I hope not, but overwhelmed by the demand for services. I'm not trying to be terrorizing your mind. I'm looking at what's going on in Italy. I'm looking at what's going on in New Rochelle, New York. And I'm looking at what has just been announced, that it is a global pandemic. So we're beyond what about my 401k. I will come back and talk about that. But I just think everybody needs to understand the seriousness of the impact, not only on the stock market and not only on the economy, as everything from March Madness to potentially April 15th, tax day, is being considered as not sacrosanct anymore. We'll have to do something about that. The remedies they have are not good because we don't know the numbers because they haven't gotten the tests out.
312-981-7200. Terry Savage will be taking your calls. G here with the Winter's Business Lunch. Our number is 312-981-7200. Terry Savage is with us. Of course, you can check out resources and her weekly column on terrysavage.com. Terry, are you ready for a call?
Yeah, no, I want to say one thing first, G.
Sure.
So let me answer 49 questions all at once.
Okay.
Number one, the market is down now currently at about 1,250 points. It's over 5%. So we are officially at the level down 20% from the highs that would say this is a bear market. That's the definition of a bear market. It's my best guess that today the market will close down in bear market territory. I'm not wishing for that. I would like to see another rally, but the big rally we had was that just yesterday that bounced us back. That isn't holding. So I can assume that once you get headlines tomorrow about, we're in a bear market, you will get another onslaught of selling, not from all of you in our audience, but from those who are just waking up to this fact and going home and looking at their 401k balances. So I'm going to answer the biggest question. Is it too late to do something? In my viewpoint, I think if we are truly going to be in a bear market, and if truly the economy is going to be impacted the way it looks like it will be, I think, no, it's not too late. But watch this. If you put in an order in your 401k today before the close, which is a couple of hours from now, you will get today's closing price. If you wait to think about it overnight, you will get tomorrow's closing price. I think tomorrow, I don't have a crystal ball, but I think tomorrow could be equally ugly. And if it's not tomorrow, I think over the weeks and months ahead, we will see lower levels. So decide, if you haven't got enough liquidity, take your 20% loss. I mean, many stocks are down far more than that, energy stocks and so forth. But the S&P 500 and the Dow now, the average is down about 20%. Official announcement will come in the next, unless we have some surprising bounce. I don't know what could cause a bounce today. So if you make your mind up to sell, do it before the close today. If it's in your 401k, mutual funds are priced after the close. So if you wait till call them at 7 o'clock tonight, you have to wait till tomorrow night's close. And I'm not sure that's a good idea at all.
And you're not surprised at all after talking with you yesterday that a bounce didn't happen after the fiscal stimulus package. And more details
there's
on that.
No, wait, gee.
Yes.
This impact on the economy is bigger than anything the government can do or propose. They're very reactionary. They haven't gotten it through. And we've got to help the people that aren't working, not cut taxes on those who are. It's we've denied science. We've denied reality. And this is a very serious impact on our economy and on our lives.
So was...
Okay, now I'll take questions. I just wanted to be unequivocal about that. I'm not hedging bets anymore. I begged you for months to get some liquidity, the retirees and pre-retirees, 3 to 5 years living expenses. And now I just urge you to protect some of the profits. We're still far above. We're at close to 23,007 something. You know, you didn't think the market was going to be there 3 years ago. You've made a lot of money. Protect your profits, some of them.
Okay, let's take our first call. Tim, this is G. What is your question for Terry Savage?
Hi, Terry. I was just wondering, actually, I have two questions. Isn't this a great time to be buying stocks? And also, as a defensive move, would REITs be a good place to be in?
All right. Number one, we'll only know in hindsight whether I'm right or wrong. I don't time markets. What I'm talking about is protecting your daily lifestyle, your retirement, and so forth. I don't think anybody should be 100% in stocks, and I'm 100% sure that we will look back, and some stocks will make their bottoms today or tomorrow, and it might be a great time. I just don't do that. Number two, it's going to be hard to find a place to hide. Real estate investment trusts, many of them, have hotels in them. Excuse me? Those rooms are going empty. So, you know, real estate is not a bad place to hide from the stock market, but real estate investment trusts, many of them are going to be impacted. And you know why I remember this so well? That's exactly what happened after 9/11 when the stock, when everybody stopped traveling and everything was shut down. So be very careful if you're going to invest in real estate investment trusts. Retail malls, that's not a good place to be. Okay, storage lockers, I don't know if people are stocking up on food, maybe. But really, seriously, it's not, for most people who are listening to the Noon Business Hour wanting advice, this is not a great time to look for bargains. They may be there, I don't know, but in general, you want to be protecting profits, not bargain hunting.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Tim, for calling.
You bet.
Okay, here's a question from the 224. I sold 2 weeks ago. I can go back to my old positions, and I'm like 8% up. I know market timing is not a good idea. Is it too early to buy right now? Similar to Tim's question. I still worry it might go down some more. Thank you for your thoughts, Terry.
I still worry it might go down some more, too. I know that I will never know when the bottom is. I just know that the economic bottom has not been made yet, and the market looks at the economy. And I know we don't have a full picture of the economic slowdown that's about to result from all these things being canceled, all these people losing jobs, the inability potentially of our government to handle a good response to it. That's not a time when I want to be out on the edge buying. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm a chicken. You know, I coined the term chicken money. I have no problem riding it out and missing the bottom with the portion of my money that I've determined is chicken money. Do I still have some stocks and mutual funds that I plan to hold forever? Yep, those are the ones I hope to leave to my children so that they'll get a step up in basis and at a much higher value when I'm long gone. I'm not running to the bunkers in cash completely, but I have enough cash, and I've been planning for this, so that I won't feel really scared enough to sell at the bottom. That's the last thing you want to do. And that's what makes bottoms. I don't think we're there yet.
Terry, you have been warning everyone for a while, always about diversification and making sure to have some liquidity as well. What were the signs for you in terms of knowing that this was coming?
Because nobody believed it was coming. I didn't know the coronavirus was coming, of course. But we were 11 years into a bull market when we've never had that length of a bull market. Everybody was optimistic. People were telling me how they were going to trade options. I mean, my gosh, everybody had forgotten how scary it was a decade ago, and was so thrilled with all the money they had. They never gave any thought that it could decline, the market could decline. You know, I tell this story all the time. You've heard me say it. When I was on the trading floor in 73, 74, and the market was cut in half, the Dow went from over 1,000 to below, it went to an intraday low of 570.01. So that's 50%. That's something like, I'm not predicting this, but it would be the equivalent of how you'd feel if it went to 16 or 15,000. Now, I remember looking at this old trader saying, wait, everything went down. Where did all the money go? I mean, I wondered who got it. And he looked at me and said, well, my dear, It went to money heaven. And right now, valuations are dropping. Retirement account balances are dropping. And there's never been a 20-year period where you lost money in a diversified portfolio of large company American stocks with dividends reinvested, even adjusted for inflation. So if you've got a 20-year time horizon, wonderful. It's going to be a bargain opportunity for those still contributing to their 401ks. But if you're near at retirement, I'm just never going to tire of saying this, you need 2 or 3 years of liquidity, money to withdraw, to live on. It is not too late, because if and when we close today down 20%, tomorrow's headlines are going to be the bear market has started, and more people will panic. We haven't seen the market panic yet. I don't think we've seen the coronavirus panic either.
Terry, let's take a call from Dale. Dale, what's your question for Terry Savage?
Hi. Last week, I got out of the market, and I went into more into bonds and treasury notes. And when the market was going up, the treasury notes weren't doing anything. But when the market went down, the bonds were going up. The last few days, I noticed that the bonds were going down, even when it was an up market. Like yesterday, Monday, I got beat up pretty bad, even though I was mostly
in bonds. I got your picture here. Look, when the market collapsed, money from around the world said, wait a minute, U.S. Treasuries are still yielding, 10-year Treasuries, 1.5%. I'm going to go out of the stock market. We're all over the world. I mean, we're not just talking about America. And I'm going to buy U.S. Treasuries. Buying that influx of money pushes yields down. Okay? So interest rates on the 10-year Treasury fell to below 0.5%. Today they're at about 0.8%. There's not a link, immediate link, but that was the rush of scared money deciding that the U.S. dollar and Treasury IOUs at least gave you safety and some yield, which you cannot get in Europe where the interest rates are negative. In Germany or Switzerland, you put your money in the bank, you pay them 1% to hold your money. I know it's an incredible concept. So do not expect, number one, that interest rates will fall that much further. They don't have that much further to fall here. So as rates go down, your bond funds prices went up. The second thing I want to warn people about is not all bonds are equal. IOUs from the Treasury are the best credit in the world. But a lot of people are invested in bond funds where they're supposed to have all investment-grade bonds. And I wrote a column just a month ago, it's still up at terrysavage.com, called Beware of Bonds. Many of these funds have triple B credits. Triple B rated bonds, and then they're still investment grade. But a lot of those are energy companies. And when they have to cut their dividends or maybe can't pay the interest on the bonds, they may default, and that will impact the value of bonds even when rates are going down. So there's a ways to lose money in bonds, too. There's a column up still. Look in my columns and scroll back for about 3 or 4 weeks called Beware of Bonds.
Terry's website is terrysavage.com. A ton of articles, resources on the website. Also, there is a button that says Ask Terry, and Terry will get back to you and answer your questions. Terry Savage, thank you so much for being with us today.
Gee, let's all be watching for where the close is today. But if, in fact, you get headlines on a close that is with the Dow below 1,200 points, you can expect that tomorrow the news will headlines will say bear market. So stop right now and think, do you have enough cash in your retirement account? It's not too late.
Thank you for all the great advice and being with us all week, Terry. We'll check back in with you. G here with the Winter's Business Lunch. Wanted to read some listener comments before we continue. From the 312, the economy is nothing like 2008. And from the 612, Terry, you're a little bit too much doom and gloom. In time, there will be treatment for this virus. It's not the end of the world. The market is going to come back when this virus is under control. Thanks all for your comments and calls. If Terry couldn't get to your question, be sure to check out her website, terrysavage.com. She does take questions there, and she does get back to you and answer them. Okay, so moving on, we're talking with two brothers, the Gomez brothers, Irvin and Topolzin, and they are both Ivy League graduates, and a scholar program in Lake Forest actually helped them achieve their dreams. Hi, guys. How are you?
We're doing great. How are you? Thank you for having us.
Okay, so Irvin, you started, you're the older brother.
That's right.
Okay, and you started in the program. Can you tell us about this program in Lake Forest that helped you achieve your dreams?
Sure. So the program was founded by Jack Schuler with the mission of providing resources to under-resourced students from the initially Northern Illinois area. The whole goal was to provide them with the right resources, the right opportunities, so that it could successfully enroll and then graduate from a top university.
Topiltzen, this is a remarkable story because you both immigrated as children to Waukegan from a very small town in Mexico. You spoke no English, and yet you were able to take ESL classes, and now you're both graduates. You graduated from Yale. Irvin, you graduate from Dartmouth, and you're both in business.
That's right.
Topiltzen, tell me a little bit about how it was for you being part of the scholar program.
Well, it really was an eye-opening experience. First, coming from the background that we come from, it was always a nebulous concept to pursue higher education. We didn't really have the roadmap for it. So thankfully, the Schuler Scholar Program not only told us what to do and what forms to file, but really gave us that one-on-one coaching that is so important at that post-secondary education level. So it really just changed the trajectory of our lives.
So Pilsen, where do you work now?
So I currently work at a startup based in Pittsburgh. It's called Honeycomb Credit. It is a loan crowdfunding platform where everyday people can invest in local businesses in their community. So, you know, if you're looking at the market and you're thinking about other places to put your money, Main Street could be one of them.
Irvin, where do you work?
I work in Boston at a tech company called Catalan Technologies. We've raised over $300 million in funding. We specialize in helping enterprises get from strategy to execution faster through different ways, and I'm part of the sales management and operations team.
Irvin, did you imagine that you wanted to go into business when you were growing up?
There was always a sense that we would somehow end up in business. I think my brother and I both struggled between choosing between academia and business, but as we realized, we had a golden ticket by going into an Ivy League institution, and we realized that this was our opportunity to help our parents achieve some form of social mobility. And I think that's what drew us into business. Also, I think that it suits our long-term plans well. We both want to be entrepreneurs. We both want to make a difference through business, and so we decided to get started right away.
Topiltzen, what about your background makes you the best entrepreneur? Like, what about the experiences that you had growing up, how does that help you as an entrepreneur?
Well, I think I come from a entrepreneurial story, right? If we take a look at many of the people who came to the U.S. and left everything behind, they're the quintessential entrepreneurs. So I kind of grew up around people who were trying to make the most of very little resources. And then when I, you know, ultimately got what Irvin calls this golden ticket, I found out that I could put that same mindset with many resources. And I think that background of mine motivates me to really do the best I can with things I'm given and use all the tools at my disposal to make an impact and, you know, be valuable in the business world.
Talking with the Gomez brothers, both of you are Waukegan High School graduates. Irvin, what made being part of the scholar program equivalent to getting a golden ticket?
More than anything, it showed us what was possible. I think that when you think about under-resourced school districts and you think about under-resourced high schools, I'm a firm believer that if you can't see it, you can't be it. But the moment that someone shows you what's possible, you work your hardest to achieve that. And more than anything, the Schuler Scholar Program opened our horizons to it, opened the doors for them as well. But we still had to put in the work and get it done. But there's no way that I would have been able to even dream about applying to an Ivy League school had it not been on my radar. And thankfully, the Schuler Scholar Program put it on my radar, and as they say, the rest is history.
Topiltzen, I'm hearing that your father has a very hard time figuring out which ball cap to wear, whether to wear a Dartmouth or a Yale hat.
That's right. He has a strong collection numbering in the 20s of different college gear. And, you know, he's never too far away from a ball cap.
And they're still here in Elmhurst area?
Yeah, my parents work in Elmhurst, but we live in Waukegan.
Well, we're very proud of you, as I know your parents definitely are. Thank you so much for being with us here on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you for having us.
Of course, thanks for having us.
A lot more coming up on WGN Radio. The journey from, you know, creating a physical product and getting it to customers is pretty long and complicated, and something that was probably lost on many of us that we didn't really think about before the coronavirus pandemic happened. Of course, creating products involves dealing with overseas factories, and then you're also sourcing from multiple suppliers, and there's international shipping involved, and there's also managing of inventory. To check in on how coronavirus is affecting the global supply chain, we have joining us right now Rodney Manzo. He's the founder and CEO of Manvel. Hi, Rodney.
Hello, how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being with us. So we just wanted to check in and see, how is everything going? What sectors are the most affected currently by the disruption to the global supply chain?
Yeah, like you're seeing with COVID-19, anyone could be impacted. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're located, and it's similar to supply chain. So as you can see, like factories globally are very interconnected. So it's really, we're seeing every industry, and we have thousands of suppliers producing, you know, goods all the way from, you know, companies like P&G on down. So really no one has been immune from being hit with this.
I know that we'd heard a lot initially about the automotive sector, the tech sector. We'd heard about Apple's products as well. There's also the fashion industry is also hit. Any surprises in terms of which sectors were hit more than others? Who didn't really have a backup plan? Any suggestions for what smaller companies can even do in light of not being able to receive goods?
Yeah, so my background actually was working at Apple, so I'll speak on that point. As they develop their supply chain, it's heavily focused on China and Korea, et cetera. So if companies are focused on one of those locations in those countries shut down, where we saw here at Anvil, 93% of suppliers were impacted in China, and meaning mostly that they were shut down for an extended period of time, you're going to get hit. So it's really based on that location where you're producing. Italy is huge in garments. So obviously there's issues in Italy, but it's dependent on location and where you're producing. Going to your second question about who would be impacted most, small versus large companies. As you can imagine, when factories come back online, they start producing with the companies that are going to bring them the most revenue, which typically is the biggest companies, and then the least amount would be smaller companies. So I would expect there to be a longer delay for smaller brands that receive their products.
What are some options for a plan B when you are a company that's hit hard by this? You mentioned smaller companies. What could they do? What can they do?
Yeah, there's a few things, and you know, I've been speaking with some of our enterprise customers, and they have contingency plans that they're constantly running. So the first thing is truly know your supply chain. A lot of brands just don't know where their products are coming from. You need to know where they are so you can kind of see around the corner. The second is look at different locations to produce your products. So have a second source. And then lastly, you need to stay on top of it. And there's brands like, you know, Anvil, where we're digitizing the supply chain, but there's other things that you can do. But those three things would be helpful for any business.
What are some of the other things you can do that you just mentioned to stay on top of what's going on the supply chain?
Where I like look at things, which is an easy win, is having safety stock. Essentially, that's just having more inventory in your distribution centers in those countries that you're selling into. So order more. And ordering more obviously can hurt your margins, hurt your business, but it's guaranteeing supply. And if you have a good forecast and roadmap, you'll eventually go through those products. But that's a very simple thing for anyone to do. Just have more inventory on hand.
Definitely something to look for, to look towards in the future. But if you don't have backstock, what are some of the other options that you have?
Yeah, you can imagine, like, depending on the product, it takes a long time to tool and bring up a factory. You can't just shift overnight. A lot of times it takes 3 to 4, if not 6 to 12 months, to produce product from scratch in a different location. So short term, you need to stay on top of these factories and understand what they're coming up, when they're going to start producing, how many they're producing. In parallel, I would recommend looking at other sources, but this is not something that you can just immediately fix unless you had something in place already.
So a lot of economists predicted that the middle of March, where we are right now, is when the coronavirus would have its biggest impact on global supply chains, forcing thousands of companies to throttle down or temporarily shut down assembly and manufacturing plants. Is that what you see is happening? Do you think it's going to get worse? Do you think it's going to get better? The WHO just characterized this virus officially as a pandemic.
Yeah. I'll talk specifics here around the numbers we're seeing, and I'll just focus on China, and then I'll relay that to the rest of the world. So I mentioned 93% of factories were hit, meaning that they were producing no goods at all. Last week, they were at 60% of their workforce back, so roughly around 70% of their capacity to produce. This week, China is at 76% of their workforce back, producing around 80% of their products. So next week, probably China will be at 100% capacity. And when I talk about China, that's broadly overall. There's some locations that are still hit. If that continues, if other regions like the U.S. are hit, kind of what happened into China, you're going to see the same kind of shutdown to slowly ramp up and bring up again. But right now, we're not seeing any impact in the U.S. in manufacturing. China's coming up. It's really in Italy and Korea, according to our data.
Okay, well, thank you so much. This is the founder and CEO of Anvil, Rodney Manzo. And Rodney, do you mind telling us one more time what Anvil does and how you can help companies?
Yeah, Anvil is a digitized supply chain software, making it smart and saving time, saving money. And our website's www.anvil.com, ANVYL.com. Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for being with us. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.